Thank you, Dr. Stewart, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. The thing that I'd like to state, I'm obviously not Daryl Busby. He's a lot taller than me, and he has less hair than I do. But he's a really good friend, and I'm actually on the feedlot board. I still work for Red Angus Association, but I'm on the board, and he asked me to make this presentation for him because he just retired, effectively May 1st. And he's had some health issues, so he asked me if I would make this presentation today. So I hope we'll do half as good a job as he's done in the past, I know, with this program. The Tri-County Steer Carcass Futurity is a program that's been around for a long time. Daryl started as the area livestock specialist in southwest Iowa in 1980, and he kind of got this thing off the ground. Really, it had a start with a small group, much like what Georgia Challenge and some of the other programs had, in that there would be cow-calf producers in western and southwestern Iowa that would maybe consign 3 to 5 or maybe 6 or 7 head of calves to see what they were actually doing on the rail. They didn't measure as precisely then as they did on some of the growth things like feed efficiency and some of those things. But that started out that way in a very small way, and over time it grew, and I would say that it really snowballed about the last 15 or 20 years. And the program has fed almost 100,000 head of cattle from 27 states and Canadian provinces. So it's really grown. It's been very, very popular. And these member feedlots, and there's been as many as 12 or 10 or 12, there's 7 right now, and that there's a little flux and change with that. But they're all located within about a 60-mile radius of Atlantic, Iowa. And so it's all very close. They have access to lots of corn. I know this is a surprise to a lot of you, but Iowa's the number one corn state, so there's a lot of corn around, right? And so it's a good place to feed cattle from a cost-to-gain standpoint. And so we're just going to review some of the data that Daryl has collected, and I would venture to say here today that you will not find another data set like this anywhere in the United States. There's more numbers and more data and more performance data and more carcass data than you'll see in any program of its kind. So if you want to see more of the data, you can go to the website and look through some of that, but we're going to try to cover very briefly what this steer futurity does and what some of the factors are that affect profitability and retained ownership programs. What does TCSCF do? Well, they collect growth and carcass data, right? They analyze the data and prepare the reports for the producers. You will always get a summary letter that will benchmark your cattle against what has been done in previous groups. For instance, if your steers gained 3.2 pounds a day, everybody else has gained 3.1 or 3.6, you can benchmark and see kind of where your cattle come out. And they'll do that by gender. So they'll analyze that data. They'll give you a profit and loss statement, of course, and all that kind of information. But the more that you provide the futurity with, the more information you provide them with, the more you will get back. Daryl was really one of the first guys that started collecting disposition data on cattle, and he would measure that by shoot speed. And how fast they came out of the chute after they'd been worked, because they get processed at the individual feedlots. And that has proved to be very valuable to the industry. And the information has been used to get a little bit better every day. Now, secondly, they provide genetic growth, health, carcass, cost return data on retained ownership cattle. And then, hopefully, as has always been the case, and with several years in extension myself, retained ownership has always been kind of a hump to try to get over. I don't think that we have any higher percentage of cow-calf producers who retain ownership than they did 30 years ago. Maybe a little bit, but it's not much. You know, everybody kind of has a note to pay, and so everybody would like to know the carcass data today, but they don't want to own the cattle all the way through the end. Now, if you, I'm going to make a little advertisement here. If you have a group of cattle that you would like to feed in the futurity and contact them, they will do halvesies or maybe even a quarter. And sometimes we have investor people that will buy the cattle, and you'll get the data back. So it's good to have some skin in the game. So I'm not necessarily promoting that you don't, but this is a great educational tool. And I say that also from the standpoint that how many of you have never seen a slide from the Tri-County Steer Carcass Futurity Data if you've ever gone to a meeting, a beef meeting, because they're all over the place. I mean, it's just kind of like stuff you get off of Wikipedia. Everybody steals the slide. I shouldn't say steals, uses the slides, uses the information. It's been very well utilized by the industry as a whole. I got too far away. Profit. I won't spend much time here. Profitability is kind of the thing. These are all Daryl's slides. I like his one on profit buys the new toys, right? We do have to make money. And so we're going to talk about all the factors that do affect profitability in this case. Now, if you look at the last 14 years, and that's 2002 through 2015, and remember, this has been going on since 1980. But does this pointer work or not? It does. Hey, a little green dot there. Follow the little green dot. But profit in dollars per head by year has been very consistently in the black. There's only been two or three years where consigners lost money on the cattle. Very few years. So, of course, once in a while you get a problem like this. But every once in a while you get a nice surprise like this. But overall, during that 14 years, the average profit per head was $38. So of that 100,000 head of cattle that went through there, they've made money at the rate of about 40 bucks a head. So then what, there's another guy by the name of Mike King, and you've probably seen Mike's name on a lot of these different papers that have come out as a result of the data from Tri-County. And Mike King is another good friend of mine. He's brilliant in my mind because he's a great statistician. But he does all the analysis for this. And Certified Angus Beef paid for some of this data to get this run. And only cattle that had complete carcass data are included in this. So every once in a while, a carcass drops out, falls out, whatever happens. But only cattle with complete carcass data, fat thickness over the 12th and 13th rib, ribeye area, marbling score, hot carcass weight, KPH, all those kinds of things. And another thing that you won't see in today's data is they will also record lung adhesions. And they've looked at that as well, because you can tell where they've had to cut some lung from the inside of the carcass that indicates some respiratory problems, of course. So the profit, of course, is the gross income minus all the expenses. The value of the feeder calf is determined at the farm or at the ranch when they leave by a USDA feeder calf grader who will assign a price. And then the profit does not include risk management. If you feed cattle in this program, they will strongly recommend that you hedge using futures and or options to avoid price risk, right? And sometimes that works really, really well. A lot of times it works really, really well. But the profit that's shown in these slides does not include that. So keep that in mind as well. And then 25 states and Manitoba represented in the data. So with that, we'll kind of move on through. The one thing that they wanted to do was they wanted to remove the year effect, obviously. And I'm not a statistician, nor do I play one on TV. But the way they did this was if there was 6,000 head fed in a year, they took the most profitable one-sixth of those, six different profit groups, and then merge that into this database that you're going to see. I got to hold my tongue just right. So that method removes the year effect, and it takes care of fluctuations in feeder calf prices. And each animal is ranked within the year that it was marketed. So if the cattle go on feed in the fall of 2016 and they are sold in the spring of 2017, then they're going to go in that year's worth of data. So this is those six profitability groups, and the most profitable group made $216 a head on average. And the least profitable group lost $120 a head. I'm not really a mathematician either, but it's about $336 difference between top and bottom, right? If you've seen other data, that's not surprising. A lot of that is carcass weight, right? A lot of it has to do with how the cattle graded and how they did on the grid, because all of these cattle, none of them are sold live or in the meat. They're sold on a carcass-based merit system. And we'll get a chance to look at some of those premiums and discounts here in just a minute. Daryl likes ovals. So on these slides, next few slides, you'll just see he's highlighted the top three groups, and they made an average of about $137 a head on those top three profitability groups. And if you really compare that to the bottom three groups, you know, it's kind of a break-even deal on the bottom side, other than those that are least profitable. You know, that can get a little bit ugly, but for the most part, we want to kind of get in that group where we're going to be making a little bit of money on our investment. This is always the biggest risk, of course, isn't it? Cow-calf producers, they want to know, well, not all of them, they want to know how their cattle will do, correct? But they often don't want to spend the money or don't have the resources to do that. So, again, this program really helps them with that. And you can see what kind of money is made in this program. But the biggest thing is, why the big difference? What are the things? Well, you can probably name a lot of them in your own mind, right? There's a lot of things that go on here that anybody that's been in the cattle business would know. But we'll look at some really interesting things. If you look at that by the end weight, when they entered the feedlot, the magnitude of difference is really not that large. So 679 pounds, although it's statistically different, is still only on the least profitable group, is really not that much heavier. But you do see a definite downtrend. So the calves entering the feedlot program have generally been a little bit lighter, but again, not by a lot. And then if you look at that feeder market value in dollars per hundredweight by profit group, guess what? The cattle that made the most money cost the least, right? So the old cattle feeders will always tell you that, you know, the profit is made on the front end by buying the cheap calf, right? Well, and that goes against what we try to promote, don't we? We talk about we want to create value for the calves because we want to get the most money for the calves when we sell them as weaned calves or maybe as yearlings or whatever. So, but the fact is that price is cheaper on those, and that's not terribly surprising. So when you look at the feeder market value in dollars per head, they were about $600 a head, and the least profitable were $707 a head. All right? So then if we compare those two, the end price per hundredweight versus the outweight price, we had a convergence, don't we? We bought them cheap and sold them high. That's a huge gap from 124 all the way down to 87, isn't it? That is a really, really big difference. But where does that come from? It comes from performance, it comes from good health, and it comes from good genetics, which we're going to talk about here real briefly. And those cattle also came out the most profitable, of course, gain the fastest, get bigger, you got more pounds to sell, and that's affected by a lot of different things. The warm-up period is the first 28 days on feed. When those cattle arrive at the feedlot, you know, they're off the truck. A lot of them come from this part of the country, the Georgia Beef Challenge, again, cattle. It's a long haul to Iowa, and, you know, it takes them a little time to catch back up. But the most profitable group of cattle really got off to a good start. And I think there's a lot of different things at play here, although I don't have numbers to back up every one of these. Is those cattle have been weaned for a longer period of time. They're used to eating out of a bunk. They've got a little bit more immunity and things going on there. Plus the genetics obviously are going to make a big difference. And then when you look at the overall average daily gain, again, no surprise, the cattle that made the most money gained the fastest. Okay, and there's even between, you're looking at a half a pound almost, 0.4 pound difference day between the least and the most profitable. The total cost of gain is, and that includes everything. That includes yardage, it includes health treatments, it includes feed costs, and all of those factors that go into that. So again, they're feeding cheaper, they're gaining more, they're heavier. Health and problems at the feedlot are huge. You know, it's been well documented that BRD is the big problem in the feedlot, right? That's the profit robber. So those cattle that were treated one time, and if you look at the red bar, those are the cattle that were treated once on the least profitable, were almost one in five of those cattle had to be treated at least once after they arrived at the feedlot because of a sick pull, while only 10% of those in the most profitable group had to be pulled. And the killer, and you'll see that in a slide down the road here a little bit, those cattle that get treated two or more times, you know, they really never do fully recover. They just really never do fully recover. They continue to underperform. They continue to not gain weight. They continue to not come to the feedlot or to the feed bunk as well or as consistently. Those health-related considerations, when we look at the cost analysis, will include the medicine costs and then shoot charge by the feedlot, a mortality rate, those that die, and it affects carcass gain, carcass merit, and feedlot gain, obviously, because they're not feeding as well, they're not eating as well, they're not performing as well. So this slide is really kind of cool here. When you look at the delivery weight and age on morbidity, there were, now, this doesn't include all 14 years, so you're not going to see 97,000 head. I think this is just maybe the last 6 or 7 years on this particular slide. But the number of cattle that were not treated at all, the vast majority of cattle were not treated at all. So that's a good indication that we got some good health programs going on at the farm or ranch. And they constituted 82% of that total. But those cattle also came in heavier and older than the cattle that had been treated once or treated twice. Much lower percent, but those cattle were fully 30 pounds to 40 pounds lighter and younger when they arrived. One of the biggest mistakes you can make is letting them go too soon when they're not ready. And you're always going to have some tail enders because all calves are not born on the same day, right? So when we talk about synchronizing and doing those things back at the ranch to make them all the same age, a big part of that equation is getting cattle that are a similar age so you don't have one that's 300 days that shipped and one that was 180 days that shipped. Because that younger calf isn't going to stand nearly as good a chance as that older calf is. And as we look at feedlot performance, days on feed, those kinds of things, the final weight, of course, is heavier on those calves that never get sick. They spend fewer days on feed. They have average daily gains that are a quarter to a tenth of a pound higher. The feed to gain and the estimated dry matter figures are estimated because oftentimes, and I think Georgia Beef Challenge would be that way, you have multiple owners in a pen of cattle. And so to allocate feed bills, they use the Cornell net carbohydrate system to figure based on performance what their feed bill, what they think they ate. So I would use a little bit of caution when you talk about the feed efficiency and dry matter intake because those would not be individually measured parameters. And then when you look at quality grade and yield grade things as we go through here, it's not any surprise that those that are never treated are a little fatter. They're going to put on flesh a little bit easier. So they're consequently, they're going to have a little higher numerical yield grade. And so you're going to get this grid in particular that Tri-County uses pays premiums for yield grade ones and twos. So you pick up a few premiums on those cattle at a lighter weight, which is not advantageous, of course. But another thing that's unique to this program, and you won't see this much in today's cattle feeding industry, is that you will find very few yield grade 4 and 5 cattle in the Tri-County system. And that is because they have a target fat thickness of 5/10 of an inch. So they do it by looking at them and running them through the chute and feeling them. They don't use ultrasound, and they get doggone close at estimating that. So they will end up with very few yield grade 4s in this program or in this system. So you won't see many yield grade discounts. When you look at the quality grade, again, of course, you're looking at marbling scores that are higher, small 29, which just kind of gets into low choice. Those that were treated one time, still low choice, but a little lower marbling score, two times, high select, the average grade for those cattle. Not a lot of primes in this system. At least in this database, just 1% prime. But the premium choice, which would be upper two-thirds of choice, was higher for the non-treated cattle. Low choice numbers also higher with fewer selects. And that choice-select spread right now is huge. It was $25 last week, 100 weight. So it's big. It's big, and it makes a big difference in how the cattle will grade and how they'll be paid. And then percent CAB on those cattle that are upper two-thirds choice and black-hided, we had a higher percentage of those qualifying too that were not treated at all during the feedlot period. So if you add up all the difference in dollars returned per head that's relative to the value, to the number of treatments, and we use the non-treated cattle as our par value, we look at death loss discount of $31 and 100. That's the big killer, of course, is the deads, because you know you save on the feed bill, but then you don't have anything to sell at the end, right? And you got to pay somebody to come pick it up, which is aggravating. But anyway, you got a little bit of a premium here again on the yield grade because of these cattle were a little bit leaner, but you lost so much here. And this is what's interesting. This is just 2004's data. Now, fast forward this to 2014 and look at what has happened with the price of cattle, the price of feed that we had, would have experienced a little bit higher price for corn and those kinds of things. So if we go back, we lost $201 a head for all those that have been treated twice. But in 2014, that jumped to $365, so it nearly doubled. That's a lot of money to me. And I hope everybody else will agree that that's a big chunk of dough if you have very many that had to be treated twice. Terry Engelken is a vet at Iowa State that did another study. So this is not Tri-County data, but he wanted to look at tenderness. He found a lot of the same things that Daryl did in the untreated cattle: a higher quality grade, heavier weights, better average daily gains. But I think the thing that stands out here, and you know, we're trying to do everything we can to make sure the consumer has a pleasurable eating experience, and the Werner-Brasler shear test was actually significantly lower than those cattle that had been treated once or twice. So from a consumer acceptance standpoint, that's important as well. This is a really interesting slide, and I won't take too much time because I'm just about out of time, but the effect of weaning status on respiratory disease. If you'll look, this is a little busy and a little too colorful for me, but the non-weaned cattle, the percent that were treated that were not weaned at all, they were loaded on the truck, 30% of those cattle were treated, okay? Only 13% of those cattle that were weaned at least 30 days got a treatment. And then when you look at those cattle that were treated three times, again, we have six times as many down here that were weaned less than 30 days or not weaned at all. And then the first treatment relapse, again, we have some issues there. So I just can't stress enough the fact that these cattle need to leave before they ever get there. And we've seen it on local cattle as well as cattle that come from the southeast. So it happens in Iowa, cattle that get shipped there from Iowa as well as cattle that get shipped there from Georgia. Using modified live versus killed vaccines, again, what you would expect happened. Those cattle that were treated with modified live vaccines had fewer sick pulls. Sire difference, I will wrap up with these two slides because we are talking about genetics, I think, at this meeting. There's two slides here. One is the top profit bulls, the bottom profit bulls for 2008 through 2010. I would ask that you look really closely at these two columns here. There's good bulls, there's good sires in all breeds, and all breeds were represented in the top and the 25 and the bottom 25%. But if you look at that again, the top 25% of bulls, okay, delivery weight's heavier, spa calf value is higher, disposition score is lower, average daily gain is higher, final weight's higher, feed to gain is better, feed cost to gain is lower. And on the carcass deal, once again, the cattle are about the same fat thickness, have a little significantly higher ribeye area and a higher marbling score, and cattle that grade at a better rate and capture those prime and upper two-thirds choice premiums plus that choice select spread. Now, again, this is 2008 through 2010. So if you look at that 168 versus 92 at the bottom, the difference in the profitability there, when we go to 2010 through 2014 in that five-year period, again, that's all jumped. We got more dollars at risk, and we've got more dollars to gain if we do everything right. So it's twice the profit on those top 25% of sires. So Lawton, without further ado, I want to leave some time for questions. There's a few more slides, but I will probably not have time to get through all of them. But I guess if you're ready for questions,
sure.
I am.
Sure.